Hi, this is Ian Crichton from 6x6, and you're listening to Michael's Record Collection.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to Michael's Record Collection, where we talk about great music with the people who make it and the people who love it. This is episode number 132. And I know it's been a while. I apologize. Life has sometimes gotten in the way, but I'm back. Episode 132 features my interview with guitarist Ian Crichton. You may know him from his fine work with the Canadian progressive rock band Saga. Ian is also a member of a band called 6x6. You may recall 2 years ago I had Robert Barry on to talk about 6x6's self-titled debut album. The band is back. That's right. Today is the 26th of April, 2024, and it is the day that 6x6 drops its sophomore release, Beyond Shadowland. 6x6 did not have, I'm happy to say, a sophomore slump. This album is just as good as the debut, if not better, and it was great to talk to Ian about how it was made, as well as his musical background, a little bit about Saga's beginnings and that kind of thing. So big thanks to Ian. Can't wait to bring you that interview. Before we get to that, I want to do a little bit of housekeeping. Would like to ask you to visit michaelsrecordcollection.com. There are links there to everything, including how to sign up for my free newsletter. It comes to your email every week. Well, usually it comes every week, and it doesn't cost you anything. So check that out. You can also find links there to all my social media accounts. On Twitter, it's at Mike's Records, and it's Michael's Record Collection. On Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok. There's also a link there to my Patreon if you want to support this independent endeavor. Also love to hear from you. Give me a shout at michaelsrecordcollection@gmail.com. All right, with all that housekeeping out of the way, let's get to that interview with Ian Crichton about the new 6x6 album. Here we go. I am very excited to be joined by guitarist Ian Crichton, who you know from Saga. We're here to talk about 6x6, about to put out their sophomore album. Ian, thanks for your time.
Yeah, nice meeting you, Michael.
Nice to meet you. I want to start out by asking you what I ask all my guests, which is, Ian, what was your first favorite record?
She Loves You by the Beatles. I was 6 years old, I think.
Okay. Yeah, a lot of people on here have cited the Beatles, which is understandable. Now, I know obviously you and your brother are musicians. Do you come from a musical family? Were your parents, your grandparents, was there music always around, or did you guys sort of pioneer the musicianship in the family?
Yeah, there's no musicians in the family. My dad was a writer. He's from Ireland. My mom's from Scotland. She taught Scottish country dancing. You know, that's about it, right? No, I mean, basically, Jim and myself started. Jim's like 3 years older. So when you're 12, that's a big difference. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of where it started.
Okay. And did you just, you know, want to emulate Big Brother, or did you have a similar musical interest? Did he kind of play records for you? How did that sort of relationship develop?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're talking very young, right? So, I used to hear a lot of music from his bedroom. It just got into that. I mean, I just loved it. All these old albums, King Crimson, and all that stuff. I mean, it started with Eric Clapton, Jeff Beck, Jimi Hendrix.
All right. When I talked to Robert Barry, he told me that when you guys started to talk about this 6x6 band, he kind of envisioned it slightly different from you. He said that you were kind of more wanting a power trio like Cream. He was thinking more something a little bit more musical like Rush, but you guys kind of split the difference to some extent on that.
Well, actually, when I first met them, I was contacted in 2020 during the first year of COVID, and nobody was doing anything. It was perfect timing for me. So I had all the time in the world to be writing with Robert and do that first record. The idea that the management and I mean, was pushing forward for a couple months was they kept using the word Asia, and I wasn't into that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's Even though I did an Asia album once, you know, but I was into something more happening, you know, like I kept telling them we got to make our own sandwiches, you know. Just make your own band, you know, like don't really follow anyone, you know.
Right. I guess kind of jumping around a little bit, but let's go back to you guys being a little younger. When you guys started Saga, this came out of sort of Jim and Steve Negus's band Flood. Is that kind of how it like evolved into Pockets and eventually what we came to know as Saga?
Wow. You know your stuff. That's true. Yeah, I was 16. I could play very well, and I'm in the Toronto newspaper looking for a gig, trying to get some experience, some funny auditions, and finally got into a band called Kickback. That was my first band, and we played all over Ontario and Quebec. Now, in the 70s, you could play from Monday to Saturday every single night, and the place was packed because that generation went out to the bars to see music and meet girls or whatever. I mean, that was the thing of the 70s, which really went away in the 80s. And so that was so healthy for a band with no money, right? And, you know, it was just perfect. I mean, you know, so we played every single week for like 3 years all over Ontario and Quebec. Yes, it did. I mean, basically, Flood was a recording act. It was my brother Jim's first recording act. And the Pilling brothers ran that, Ed Pilling and Brian Pilling. And what happened was when I was about 19 years old and I was in this band Kickback, the main writer, Brian Pilling, acquired leukemia. And he passed away at 26 years old, and that ended Flood. So then Jim took the bull by the horns and wanted to start this thing, and contacted Mike Sadler, who he'd was in a band with before called Truck. They were doing progressive stuff around the bars, and Steve Negus was involved in Flood. Steve Negus was actually playing in Kickback after Flood for a minute. He played in that band with me for a few months before it ended because we were starting Saga. That's how Saga started.
Wow. And of course you guys have gone on to great acclaim in Saga. And you know, I see your gold record there on the wall back there for Worlds Apart, which is cool. I actually have
That's my American one.
Yeah. Now, if you look at America. The bottom thing back here, that's my signed copy of Worlds Apart that Michael was kind enough to sign for me.
Cool.
But obviously, you guys took off in the 80s, especially with, with On the Loose and Wind Him Up with MTV. It had to be a crazy time for you guys. You guys had already been a band for a while, had some success, and now you're being filmed. You're having to be pop stars and make videos. What was the MTV era like for Saga?
It's crazy. It was really crazy. I mean, it really made Saga, you know, we got signed to CBS New York, great record deal. And off we went. We played around America for about 6-7 years, opening up for all the big bands, all the big venues. It was wonderful. It's hard to remember all this stuff now, but it was I used to call it being thrown to the wolves, because you know there were big auditoriums and 10,000 people and all that sort of thing. And depending where you were in America, if they knew you, you know, it's, you know, they'd go crazy for you, and then other ones would be. So you know, you had to go out there and prove yourself, and you know, give it your best, and it was great, you know.
You guys were adopted very early on by the people of Germany. What was it about Saga that resonated so strongly in places like Germany and a few other places? You guys have always had a great following there. Is it just that because progressive rock is so beloved there, or do you think there's more to it than that? Because you guys aren't like just, you were never just an out and out prog band. You had a pop sensibilities. You were a rock band that had a little bit more complicated rhythmic stuff going on than most pop and rock bands.
Yeah, we're the Saga is in both worlds. You know, it's got prog, it's got rock. You know, what happened was I think it was our first record. That's right. And they had this probably the same in America, where these stores where they do export import. So they export American bands or Canadian bands, and then get European bands in, and they're all on import, and they cost more money and all that. Hmm. That album took off around the Munich area on import. We sold 50,000 records, and that perked up the record company's ears, which started the whole thing.
Yeah.
Went over there in 1979 and did a TV show with the police were on that show, and they were doing their first song, Roxanne, right? Yeah, there we're no spring chickens.
you guys were just along for the ride there too. So now, and I don't want to belabor the Saga thing, but obviously you have a long history with that band. So I'm going to just ask one more question. I know you guys have been doing some live gigs, but what is the current status of the band? You guys last had a record out in 2021 with Symmetry. What is the current status of Saga? Is there going to be another album at some point?
It's not on the table right now, but I won't say no. I imagine at some point there will be. But, you know, right now I'm in 6x6. Saga's touring. I'm off on Monday to Panama. Saga's playing down there. And then back to Europe next month for 5 shows.
Yeah. So, have you guys ever done Panama before?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. You guys are big in some places like, you know, Central America and I believe the island countries are very fond of Saga as well.
Yeah, Puerto Rico, yeah. Venezuela, kind of crazy place, but you know. Yeah.
Let's turn our attention to 6x6, because this Robert made a point saying this is not a project, it's not a super group temporary thing. He wants this to be a band, and I assume that you and Nigel Glockler, the drummer, are also on board with that. This is a band and a growing ongoing concern that you guys would like to see be successful.
You are correct, Michael. Yeah, I would right from the beginning, I didn't want this to be a record band. And there's a lot of reasons for that. I mean, one, it has a lifespan of whatever. Two, CD sales are questionable, as we all know, all these years. So, you know, it's really all in the playing. And I love to play live. I just love to get out there and improvise. You know, you can change things every night and you get to fulfill myself doing that. And also, it's just a great way to be successful, you know. And as I was told yesterday, we have September and October open because, you know, Nigel's on tour with Judas Priest right now, you know, all over Europe, big venues. He's always busy. So we've got September, October. And I've nailed down about five shows in Europe in September. And also we're looking at playing that Prague stock outside of New York City.
Okay.
In October and San Juan, Puerto Rico. So, you know, it's a start. Yeah. And San Juan, Puerto Rico with 6x6 would be fantastic because when I was very young and Saga just started, we were playing small halls and getting success and all like that. And all of a sudden we got a call from promoter down there saying, you know, we're really well-known, would come down and do a show. So, yes, we went down and did a show. 8,000 people. I mean, I was not yet, you know, 800 people was the most I played to, you know. And I was blown away. So that was kind of my first real concert. And it really sinks into me, you know. So to have 6x6 go down there and do that, that's a good omen for me, you know. That was a hard thing back then. So, you know, we played San Juan back in 1980 or something. And then we had to fly the next day to Edmonton, Alberta to start a Rush tour.
That's a little bit of a jaunt.
Five plane rides. We got there 20 minutes before the show.
That's that fun Spinal Tap type stuff that, you know, people don't really realize that you guys go through, especially in the early days.
At least we could find the stage this time. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I see you've been questioning existence. Can't figure out how minds have changed. Understand how that gentle knot robbed you of what you believe, and now you're part of the resistance, believing no words, no demands. Raise your hands, you'll withstand. Just don't follow. Nobody could live like this. Nobody.
So 6x6, the new album's called Beyond Shadowland, and it comes out April 26th on Inside Out Music. I'm a very big fan of that label. I think that they have a great understanding of the artists that are on their in their stable and how to market to progressive and metal crowds. So I like Inside Out quite a bit. I'm assuming they've been really good to you guys.
Yeah, they have. Yeah, really good label. Yeah.
So you on guitar, Nigel Glockler, we talked about from Saxon, people who know him from Saxon on drums, Robert Barry, who's been on the show a couple of times on bass, keyboards and vocals. And this is the band's sophomore release. Your first one, the self-titled, came out in August of 22, I believe, if memory serves. And, you know, Robert told me that 6x6 is a band he definitely wanted to do live dates. He wasn't sure if, you know, how sales were going to go, if you guys were going to be able to do live dates, but it sounds like you guys are on track to do that, which is excellent. In fact, I've never been to Prague Stock, but now you've given me an excuse to go up there for that. So I would like to see you guys up there. And he told me the story that when he was trying to find his next thing after doing the third three album, that he was looking for someone who could, in his words, write unique parts, in his words, like Keith Emerson did. And his manager, Nick Shelton in England, suggested you guys talked and got together and met and discussed things. But it must feel pretty good to be kind of compared to somebody like Keith Emerson, somebody who's really good at writing unique, intricate parts that are uniquely you.
I mean, it's an honor. You know, I mean, Keith is not a guitar player, but I've been a fan of him since the Nice, like before Emerson, Lake and Palmer, you know.
I'm assuming that you're writing a lot like they did in those days. You're sending parts to Robert, and Robert, what he's so good at is taking pieces and turning pieces into songs and stitching parts together so that they make songs, and then, you know, finding something cohesive about them and then bringing them back to the group. And then you guys can sort of smooth out the rough edges. Is that still the way you guys are kind of putting these records together, these songs together?
Pretty much. I mean, Robert and I basically write everything. I send him all kinds of sections and parts and verses and licks and intros and all this stuff. And Robert is a brilliant arranger. So he gets his hands on these parts. He puts in a few of his own parts, verses, you know, things like this, does a full lyric and sends it back to me, blows me away. I mean, he's very creative, Robert. Mm-hmm. And when we first met and he did that on the first song on the first record, I was sold. You know, I thought, wow, this is a great guy to be working with. So, you know, I'm very happy, you know, with this.
And that's good, because one of the things that a band has to do is get along well together too. So,
oh yeah,
I assume the personality wise, you guys are clicking too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
So 6x6, the self-titled album you guys put out, very unique. You guys put out a graphic novel with that. And, I'm assuming one that there's no graphic novel with the new album. But I am curious as to know how that did for you, because it was a tremendous piece of art. Like, just looking at the pictures and everything was just really well done. Do you think that helped? Do you think that it kind of helped spread the word on 6x6?
Well, you know, I think so. I mean, that was a brainstorm of Robert too. You know, he arranged all of that with an illustrative person and all that. And it was his idea too. So yeah, I mean, I don't know how much help it did for us, but it could do only but help, you know.
Yeah. Do you think, looking back, I know you guys kind of started working together and you kept the band on the down low. You didn't really come out and have this big announcement. Hey, we're a band now. We're going to work on an album. You kind of left it until the work was pretty much done on the first album to come out to the world as a band. Looking back on that decision, do you think that helped you? Do you think it may have held you back a little bit? Do you have an opinion on it?
Well, you know, I've never been asked that question. I think, yeah, I'm not a great person myself for going, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming, you know, in 9-10 months, you know. Yeah. I think, you know, you tell them once and people go on with their lives. I mean, you know, it's, you know. So I think it's better to, you know, to have it pretty much finished, do the announcement, and you're not too much a long wait for it to come out.
Makes sense.
You can call this world an institution, a walk of life. Look up the draw, some solution to what you subscribe. Jump on a whim, you sink or fly. The choices come from inside. You wanna find warmth, your hopes are deep, but only you can decide. It's right there before your eyes. It's waiting there.
Now, when you work, when you guys were getting together and discussing what kind of music you would put together, or maybe you didn't even have that. Maybe it just came out of what you guys were writing. Were you making a conscious effort to not sound or play like you did with Saga?
Well, you know, I mean, for years in the back of my head, I've always kind of dreamed as a three piece, and you know, playing with Saga has been great, but to be guitar, bass, and drums was like, wow, you know, to play big shows like that, it's kind of a dream, really nice. I wanted that. When this has been presented to me, I jumped at it, you know, and the music, you know, I am playing heavier. Yeah, it's a different planet, but that's what the music called for, you know, the way we were writing and all that. It really called for me to play the way I did, you know.
And Nigel's a heavier touch guy, and Robert's a rock guy, so that kind of.
Robert's Mr. Progressive. Both worlds.
Yeah.
And Nigel's heavy metal.
Yeah, exactly.
It's made this, you know, a cool trio, you know.
Yeah. There's a side to Robert that's a little bit more rock, though, too, that, you know, from his solo albums. But so I think that it really kind of seems natural. The three of you put you in a blender, and it's kind of seems like that's what would come out. Tell me a little bit about the start of Beyond Shadowland. When was the first sort of writing for this album? When did that take place?
Start Five started last year. I was really busy last year with Saga. We toured a lot, but I was coming back, and I'd come back and a couple of days rest, turn on the studio, get back into writing. So, you know, that's why this record is coming out so soon, because I like to be busy, and it has just been an ongoing writing up until we finished the whole record last November.
Okay. Yeah. What was the first thing you wrote for this? Like the first piece
Wren.
Okay. When you started to think about album two, did you have discussions on what you wanted to do the same, what you wanted to do differently, or did you just go off and write, and that's what came out?
Just went off and write. Robert starts calling me and going, "Come on, Crichton, send me some parts here. Let's get going." You know?
Does he kind of keep everything on track?
Yeah. You know, Robert is, you know, he's really on top of the game.
Tell me a little bit about the bonus orchestral medley. There's an orchestra medley. This orchestra from Budapest, Hungary, is on
Bulgaria.
A bonus track. Yeah, Bulgaria. Okay, so they're on the as a bonus track on the vinyl version of this. How did that happen?
Once again, that was Robert's brainstorm, and he worked for a couple of weeks with them on a laptop from California to Bulgaria. And I think they did a fabulous job. It's the piece that they wrote is kind of a mix between, they took my song One Step, which is a 8-minute song, and also the song Titan. And they kind of mix that up, but you'd have to hear it, you know.
Well, I'm looking forward to the vinyl version of that. And this will be out on vinyl, CD, and digital. And you can stay tuned to 6x6band.com to find out, you know, all the details and where to order it and everything. Can you tell me which of the songs sort of kind of really resonate with you? Like once they were finished and you got the finished products and you're listening to these tracks back, which songs really spoke to you out of the ones that you put together for this second album?
I'm a big fan of Ren. I like Arms of a Word, Spectre. Well, there's stuff on all of them, really. You know, The Mission, One Step, Obliex, and nobody can pronounce that.
Yeah.
Every interview I do with, how do you say that word? Well, I made it up. That was a working title that we kept.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So it's really about leaving planet Earth and finding a more calm place, you know? So I think Obliex is that planet.
You know? Okay. That's interesting. I hadn't even gotten a chance to get around to looking that up, but that makes sense. What I'm enjoying about this second album is that these songs, it sounds like you've settled in a little bit more, are more comfortable together. They sound a little more cohesive, a little more melodic in times, but you still got some crunch there. You still got some rock. And I wouldn't compare it to Asia, but I think there is some DNA even bands like Saga and Asia and GTR, where there's some progressive and interesting things going on under the surface, but it is, it is melodic and it's catchy.
Yeah. Well, I'm really into melody, you know. I mean, rather than just winding out and, you know, a whole pile of notes and impressing people that way, I like to play something that, you know, makes you feel something, you know, kind of try to touch you, you know.
Absolutely. So when someone comes home and puts this album on and they listen to it start to finish, what do you want them to take away from that listening experience?
I want them to take away the album they just bought. No, I'd like them to, you know, my wish is everyone's wish, you know, I mean, that they really dig the record and the band and the feeling and all of that, you know.
Would you say, did Robert write all the lyrics? Did you and Nigel help with that?
No, Robert wrote the lyrics.
Yeah. And are there discussions beforehand on what the themes will be, or do you just leave it to him, his devices?
I leave it to his device. I do add some input at little spots. We change a few things and stuff like that, but it comes from Robert.
Well, you guys got to be pretty excited to get this thing out there. You mentioned finishing up in November. So you're kind of trying, you know, when you're thinking back to different songs for this, it's history, and you've probably moved on to writing new songs and things like that at this stage.
Well, it's a 3-album deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. There's new stuff already going, you know.
So you're putting new stuff together. You're thinking about this. Is this the nerve-wracking time when you're waiting to see how it's going to be received once you release it?
Well, you know, it's not so nerve wracking these days, you know, you wait and see, you know, I mean, getting out there playing is going to make a difference. It really is. when you're a record band in this time and age and it's just on the internet and all that, that's one thing. But if you get out there, start playing and building up an audience, that'll make the difference, I believe.
Ian Crichton from 6x6 and Saga, thank you so much for telling me a little bit about the making of this record. I know you got to go, but I appreciate your time. This has been fantastic for me, and I hope this album does really well for you guys.
Thanks a lot, Michael. It's been a pleasure.
Michael's Record Collection is hosted and produced by Michael Citro. Logo graphic courtesy of Jerry Cutchins. Follow Michael's Record Collection on social media, at Mike's Records on Twitter, and Michael's Record Collection on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. If you like what you hear, you can support the show through our Patreon at patreon.com/Michael's Record Collection. For the free newsletter version, go to substack.com and just type Michael's Record Collection into the search bar. Thanks for listening.